the May 26th, 2020 session of TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR. My name is Dave, KV0S. This week, I've been doing quite a bit of programming for work, a little bit of cleaning around the shack, so that's about it. Oh, I have been sorting photographs from Tapper, so that's taken me some time too. Now we'll go down the list. Next on the list is Dave, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello, everyone. I've just been crawling in from my back patio because it's been raining very hard, and I was trying to find my cats, but it got slick out there. But otherwise, I have been writing C code mostly, doing some other things, and working on this test utility for the magnetometer. Otherwise, nothing terribly exciting I can think of.
Okay, well, good. Next on the list, we have Mike, AAAK. Sean is recording and Mike muted, and we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak recordings to tsarchive.tangerinesdr.com. Next, we have Nathaniel into NAF. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Hey, Dave and the group. How are you? Things are going fine here. It's been a busy week here in Scranton. We wrapped up classes and, and grades this week. So that's all done. I've got some other review stuff I need to do this week. Most importantly for Tangerine SDR, a couple things. One is I'm working with Dev and Bill Lyles, and we've been trying to develop a new scientific mode for the Tangerine SDR, and we've been exploring different options for that. And where that's led us to so far is actually using it to listen to FM chirp ionosons. I've been in touch with Tom and Scotty about that, and Tom, it was very good to see that you have done work with FM chirp ionosons in the recent past. So we're probably going to be talking with you more about that. But it's going to be Dev's job to make that happen. And then we're also getting ready for the CEDAR workshop, which is probably going to be virtual this year. And good news for that, our DAISY project has been selected as a highlight for the CEDAR workshop this year. So I get to submit a 15-minute video presentation giving an overview of where we are in the project. And so that's quite a nice little honor. So W2NF, back to net.
Fine business, Nathaniel. By the way, to keep in mind, Phil Harmon did some chirp atmospheric radar, basically, back about 2012, and wrote several papers in the ham radio literature, and he said he was interested in maybe giving a paper at DCC this year. So with some encouragement, I think we could make that happen. Okay, next on the list is Tom in 5EAG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave. Good evening to everyone in the group. Not much related to Tangerine SDR this week. Back to the group.
Fine business. Tom, I did get copies of your book in both PageMaker and PDF. So I have the 98 revision 2. And so I'm going to be moving forward, not at a blazing speed, but forward with that. Next on the list, we have Scotty in a 2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Okay, Dave, thank you very much. And thanks for running this on this fine Memorial Day weekend. And this week, as I just got back from moving, though I think most of you know by now, we sold our office building and we're downsizing a bit. So we've got to be out by July 6th. And it was only 103 today, I think. So it was kind of balmy and cool. So not too bad. Next week's going to be up above 110 degrees by Friday. So trying to get as much of the outdoor work done as we can before the temperature goes through the roof. Anyway, on the Tangerine SDR front, I actually managed to build a FPGA image with the pinout that I have set for the RAM, just to check to make sure that it works. This is what they recommend that you do before you lay the board out, which is a good advice. And I did manage to get all of the IOs into one bank for the RAM, only to find out that the on-chip termination resistor pair is in another bank, which makes me have to run that bank at 1.5 volts, which is compatible with nothing else on the board. So still fighting with that. I think I'm going to contact the FAE on Tuesday and see if I can get a little bit of guidance, because the documentation says that I have to put terminators, pull-ups to VTT on all the data and address lines, which amounts to about 34 lines. So you can imagine having to add 34 pull-up resistors plus a regulator to the design. And every single design that I look at, every sample design that I can find, does not use these resistors. So I want to find out what's going on, why they say in the documentation you have to use them, yet nobody does. So anyway, zeroing in on the data engine, the other board that we were working on, it was finished on Thursday, and our CAD guy took a long weekend, so I'm planning to dig into the magnetometer board starting tomorrow. So hopefully you can whip that up this week and maybe even get parts ordered by the end of the week. So looking forward to getting that rolling. So back over to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. And next on the list, we have Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, thanks, Dave, and good evening to everyone on the net. I've been working on designing a system which will allow the small board computer, which is part of the Tangerine, to talk to the central host and provide a heartbeat. And it's going to provide a little JSON. It's going to send a little JSON packet to the central host that says, I am here. Do you have any work for me? And in that case, where the central host needs to request data, in that case, the central host will say, why, yes, why don't you send me whatever data you have, some spectrum data between this time date and that time date, so that we can study that. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. I've got a little JSON C thing that I'm going to add to the main control. On a separate personal note, we have discovered that my wife, the little XYL, is extremely sick with a thing called MAC, which I'll put something about that in the chat. And she is very sick with a lung disease, which will take many months to cure if it can be cured. But anyway, I am not sick. Neither of us had COVID, which is a good thing, because if she got it, she wouldn't survive. But anyway, I'll put a little something about that into the chat so you can see what we are dealing with here. And beside that, that's about all there is to report. AB4EJ, back to net.
Well, Bill, I send you my heartfelt concern, and I hope things move forward. It's always challenging when you get news like that. So next on the list, we have Dan in for XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, thank you, Dave. Yeah, I'm having connectivity issues for some reason, so hopefully I'll be on walk to say, which isn't much, actually. I did buy an Odroid C4 last week, and I'm waiting for it to arrive. I've been doing a little bit of messing around with the Raspberry Pi 4B, and that, I think, is going to take a turn better, because there should be a new release of Raspbian fairly soon, and it's going to take care of a couple of problems that the B currently has. Anyway, just kind of treading water, and back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. So that brings us to the end of the list, and we're open for general discussion.
You want to pick up Orville down there?
Sorry, Orville, N8WQ. Orville, have any comments? He's mic muted right now, so...
He says nothing to report.
Well, we're open for general discussion then.
I guess first thing, Bill, I'm really sorry to hear that about your wife, and I hope things go along okay with that. Second, I got your email about the QSO Today thing, and we're actually aware of that. And I think Phil Erickson is taking the lead on that, but I think we will be doing something for that.
Fine business. Well, let me know if you need anything from me on that.
Yeah, I certainly will. We haven't quite gotten so far as to figure out what exactly we're going to do for it yet, but we just know that we're going to be doing something, I think. And so I guess another thing. Yeah, so Tom, I went through the presentation from 2015 with the Chirp Ion Essence, and that looks very promising. One thing, as I mentioned in the email, I think that particular design of antenna might be a good candidate, or at least a good starting point for what we might want to do, because it seems low cost enough, and it seems like there's a lot of fireworks going on over here. It seems low cost enough, and it has a small footprint, and it's broadband, and it is a cross polarization.
Yeah, it was certainly a junk box special. The place where I bought all the transistors and the coil forms and everything, I'm not sure is still in business. I've got to go dig through and see if they're still around.
Well, do you think it'd be hard to do some sort of a refresh on that antenna?
Yeah, I've got schematics and all of that, and so I can put out build instructions, and I'll need to look dig into the parts availability. But it did work well, so let me try to put together a package that folks can take a look at and see if it makes sense.
Yeah, I think that'd be very good. You know, it would be good for us to do a little bit more of a review of, you know, what we want for the antenna. But I mean, my gut feeling is that's pretty much the sort of thing that we're going to want. We need something that's fairly low cost. We want something that can take advantage of the dual channel, so we get the cross polarization, and we want something that's broadband HF, and so that seems to, so basically it seems like it's either going to be an active set of magnetic loops or a set of active crossed dipoles. Those seem like the two logical options to me.
Yeah, the loops are nice in that they're independent of ground, and so that's a good thing. It's a couple of times I've given demos with them where the loop is inside a room, and you basically cannot hear the WWV on the HF receiver. And I had them on a 50-foot coax, and I walked the loop about 10 feet out of the room and put it on a tree stump, and the noise level dropped about 7 S units.
Well, that's really good.
So, Tom, what did you make the loops out of?
They're made out of RG8X, and they're inside PEX tubing.
So the PEX tubing is the blue stuff. So it's a shielded loop then?
Yeah, the PEX tubing is just the waterproofing, and it's a real standard. It's just a coaxial shielded loop where the shield is split about half an inch at the top. But what's different is it goes down into a differential bipolar amplifier.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. But isn't it unbalanced at the bottom?
No. The loop is completely balanced and goes into the input of a balanced amplifier.
Oh, very good. So how does it compare to a full-size dipole outside?
Oh, the sensitivity is way down by comparison. Down at the AM broadcast band, it's got pretty deep nulls. When you get up to 15 or 20 megahertz, the loop diameter is getting big enough. It's kind of no longer a small loop. But it hears well in certain circumstances. I tried to build a lot of common mode noise rejection into the loop, and in the couple of tests I run, it seems to be reasonably good.
Was there an optimum frequency you were running the Chirp on? I remember seeing your presentation, but it's been a few years. I don't remember. I have to go back and read it again like Nathaniel did.
Yeah, the Chirp was in the 80-meter band, and so it was down around 3.6 megahertz. And that's just because that's the easy spot to find the ionosphere during the summer evening.
Is there, aside from the ground independence, well, first of all, where is that antenna sensitive to? Is it, can it be made fairly flat across the HF band? Or is it, you know, a lot more sensitive in one certain parts of the band versus others?
No, it's a very broadband antenna. Small, most people misunderstand a little bit. Small loops are actually very broadband. What makes them narrowband is if you try to transmit on a small loop, you need an extraordinarily high Q matching network to get good power transfer. Otherwise you lose all your power in the matching. But for receive, you don't really care. So it feeds a high impedance or medium impedance differential amplifier. And so really it's a fairly broadband antenna. I've heard stuff down about 350 kilohertz or so, up to probably 20 megahertz. It's not tuned at all. So the antenna itself is fairly broadband.
Yeah, that's very much in the spirit of what we want. Now I have a number of the DX Engineering, formerly the Pixel RF Pro 1B magnetic loops, which are these broadband active receive antennas. And they seem to work pretty well. They're $500 each. Why are they so much more expensive than what you're doing?
Yeah, well, I've never taken one apart. There's certainly a lot better performance than the one I'm done. The one I'm done is a junk box special. So all of the parts were, you know, on sale at Home Depot. And they were leftover scraps of coax from the junk bin. And then I hand wound all the toroids, things like that. So, you know, when you make stuff by hand and a lot of the parts are in the junk box, that really helps a lot.
Yeah, that's true. Now, do you think we would be able to get better performance and cost value from a loop like you had built? Or do you think we might do better with the active crossed dipoles?
In terms of sensitivity, you know, it's related to the size of the antenna. The larger the antenna, the more efficient it's going to be at the lower frequencies. But the key on receiving usually is signal to noise ratio. And so I don't have enough experience with the active dipoles to know how quiet or noisy they are. This particular loop antenna, you know, the tests I ran is when I get it outside the building and out into the yard, the noise level on it really drops a lot. So I've had good luck from a signal to noise perspective. The absolute sensitivity, I don't have any way to measure it.
Okay. Yeah, I think what we want to choose for an antenna for this project is basically, you know, something that's broadband, cross-polarization. We should choose something with a modest footprint, because I think for the majority of people that might be putting together personal space weather station, they may not want to use up a lot of real estate or cost. And that's not to say that we certainly can't recommend, you know, larger, better performing things as well. But I think it'd be really good to pick something that your average person that wants to put this thing in, you know, they don't have to spend a tremendous amount of money and a tremendous amount of real estate, and they can still participate effectively.
Yeah, the size, the loops are 1 meter in diameter, so the PEX tubing is 10 feet long. So it's just the stuff that is cheap at the hardware store. And so, you know, if I can still find the parts, they've got some big hunky bipolar transistors, fairly heavy current, that in order to prevent overload. And one component that's in there, I had some tunable inductors, and I use those to make suckouts in the AM broadcast band. They're pretty sharp, and I could tune each inductor. I put two channels of suckout into each antenna, so I could take out two AM broadcast carriers, and they take the carrier down pretty well. You know, so they're pretty touchy and they tune nicely, but there's only two traps per antenna, so you can only take out two AM stations, and that was done just to avoid any kind of overload. So the question is, can those parts still be found? That's a good question.
Tom, I've been looking at some of the designs, and of the transistors I could find, 2 in 5109 still is available in reasonable parts at about $3.
Okay. I used either a 5109 or a 5179. I forget which. I'd have to open the box up and take a look. Yeah. I found them for a good price, about 7 or 8 years ago, and bought a bunch of them. But I don't know if you know of a source that's one part, the inductors, cores will be another part. And I won't ask Scotty about inductor cores. I think he's got experience there. And the tunable inductors, I don't know about.
Well, the place that I found them was DigiKey, and they had a lot, a couple hundred, but I don't know how fast those could go.
Okay, very good. Well, I'll have to take a look. Let me put together a package and circulate it, and then folks can go see if they can actually find the stuff.
Hey, you know what you should do is you should design it to use some of the leftover toroid cores that we have that we used for HPSDR, because I got lots of those still in stock.
Yeah, I used a standard core. One of the transformers took like 30 turns, so I had to wind it with like number 28 or number 30 magnet wire.
Is that like on a T50-2, a red core?
I think it was I don't remember. It was like a T37 maybe.
So was it ferrite or was it powdered iron?
Oh no, it was definitely ferrite.
Yeah, most of ours are on powdered iron. They're like 61 mix or something like that, right? And on the directional coupler and a couple of the low pass filters, we used ferrite because they needed more inductance. Like on the 160 meter coil?
Yeah, the transformers, I was trying to get as broadband a coverage as I could, and ferrite generally gives a broader band in my experience. And then the common mode chokes. The common mode problem is going to happen down at the AM broadcast band, so I needed a lot of inductance in those. And so I tended to go to something that had a lot of inductance, and that was generally ferrite.
Say, Scotty and Tom, there's a message on the Tangerine list that came in today. Larry Dodd is volunteering to be a prototype tester at some point.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's with Project Jupiter, if I remember right.
He signed his thing as Radio Jove.
Yep, Radio Jove, that's it.
Yeah, and the Radio Jove people are definitely people we want to. They're good people. They know what they're doing.
He's also using an IQ2 currently, Dave.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, we managed to finally get him a custom build that has the IP address that he needs.
Oh, that's right. Well, that reminds me, I need to probably spend a little more time getting familiar with those parts of the project as well. I've been ignoring it for a little while.
Dave, when did that message come in?
It just came in. I'm trying to find a time here. Give me a minute.
Okay, I don't see it on my list. I've gotten a couple of messages. I've seen some emails to Tangerine where I see a reply, and then about 15 hours later, I see the original message.
I don't see it.
It was 8:05 p.m. May 25th.
I haven't gotten anything since the 23rd.
I must be special.
Or we're special.
I have it here, Larry Dodd. It came into my computer at 9:04 p.m. Tonight.
So we got it at the same time.
That's bizarre, because I've been having trouble with my email, so I subscribed to another email list, so I get... When I get messages, I get two copies, but most of the time I still don't get any.
Is this something that John Ackerman maintains?
Yes, I think we need to talk to him about it, because I send messages out too, and I don't see them come back, and I don't get any reject or knack or anything. It just goes into a hole and never comes out.
But remember, I had that problem at the beginning of the year when I switched over to my Scranton email. And they actually had to, I think someone at the ISP level had to unblock the Tapper server.
Yeah, didn't that happen to Dave over at Dartmouth too?
Yeah, it was the same thing. And um, it, it took a lot of tracking down because like it never, the messages never got like even to the admin level at our institutions.
So it's blocked very early then.
Yeah, it's like just goes into a black hole and there's no way to trace it. If you need me to, I can dig up those emails when we were tracing down that problem, and there might be the clue as to how they solved it.
Yeah, because John didn't have to do anything, right? You had to do something?
I think we had to convince like Microsoft to do something.
Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah, I'll have to double check on that. That was like back in September, I think, August or September.
So was that like our ISP at Tapper was getting blacklisted or something?
Yeah, that's right.
That's not a good thing.
It's showing up in the archives on the listserv, but I didn't get it either.
Yeah, I know when I would not get one, and I think there was really email there, I'd go to the archives, and they all appear to be there, just not sent out to certain people.
Well, at one time, some of these listservs filtered out the sender, as you already knew what you were sending, but many people want that reply so that they can tell that something actually went out.
Yeah, that is a checkbox option if you log in to, Mailman?
Yes.
So there's a checkbox that each user has that can say whether they want to see a copy of their own email or not. So they can decide. Doesn't work for me, though. I just don't see any.
You must be special, then.
I'm really special. So special they don't trust me with any emails.
I'm trying to look back. When I find those emails, I'll let you know, Scotty.
Okay, and meanwhile, I did see the whole raft of emails from Jules. Did you see he's run the magnetometer at 400 feet?
No, I didn't see that yet.
Go ahead, Dave.
That's in yesterday's stuff.
Yeah, he said that he is running it off of the 3.3 volts on Raspberry Pi, so he's not running 5 volts on the cable and regulating it down. He's just running the 3 volts across the cable. How's he doing that? I didn't think your setup would allow you to do that, Dave.
I don't. Sometimes I'm not perfectly clear on what he's doing. He may be putting a power supply at the far end. Sometimes the descriptions leave me wondering.
Yeah, I don't think so this time, because I was trying to figure that out also, because it implied kind of he was powering it independently. But then he says at the far end he had on transmit, when the far end would transmit back, he would get just under 3 volts at the transmit end, implying that, well, it was going over the wire and he was getting some drop.
I'll tell you one thing he's doing. He's not using my boards. He's using the SparkFun things. I sent him some of those a while back. I sent him a set of the boards that weren't built up. I suspect he hasn't built them.
Okay, that explains a lot then. Okay, so he's forging ahead on his own.
He's dug up some interesting things and ruled out some interesting things. He's been very helpful. And he's found oddness in my code at times.
Well, I think when we get these Raspberry Pi hat boards, that it's going to make things a lot easier. I just hope that that the software will be good enough for the people doing the testing to get what they need. I have no idea what they need.
I have no idea how to make it work, but I've tried to make the software flexible, though it's... I have no idea. I suspect no one's building up the boards I sent out. For as far as I know, I've not heard any, or even the ones that I built myself. I sent a whole bunch of stuff out, and since you announced that you were going to make these other boards, I bet everybody's just sitting on their hands now, and all that stuff I sent out is just trash.
Well, have you... You have PNI boards, right?
What do you mean?
You have the plug-in boards that you got from PNI, because I know, I think Dave said he bought 10 of them, I think.
He bought, Dave McGraw bought some himself.
Right, but he bought the ones from P&I, not Dave W's boards. He bought the board, the plug-in board.
No.
No, he bought the little $20 board. The other board was $200.
Right, he bought the little plug-in board that you have to add the headers to, the little $20 board that has the actual sensor and the coils on it.
Yes, but Dave bought those directly from P&I. I don't know if John got those as well, or if Dave sent him some.
Okay, I guess that's what I was asking Dave W., whether you have the P&I boards. So if I were to send you a Raspberry Pi hat, you could just plug one in, right?
Oh, yeah, I've got the P&I boards. I've probably bought 15 of them by now, but I've given a lot of them away.
Yeah, I know. I did find the ones that you sent me. So I've got one of those, and I've got one of your baseboards. I think it was one of the very early versions because it was before February.
Yeah, that was the one I was trying to get to you in time for that whatever that meeting is in Florida you went to. But that one wouldn't have worked for much.
Yeah, it was we did make it in time, and we showed it off as show and tell at the booth.
Yeah, but all these other ones that I built, either built up or kitted up and sent to people, don't seem to be getting any use, as far as I can tell. It's a big waste of time.
Hey, well, I'm running mine 24 hours a day with your current software for the last 2 weeks, except for stopping to build the next version.
You and Julius are the only ones I've heard squat from.
How about Frankie and her dad?
They may have moved to another planet, as far as I know. I have no idea. Last I heard anything from them was the day of the and I sent them one of the fancy boards from P&I, one of the $200 boards. I haven't heard a thing from them since back in whatever it was, February or something.
Oh, well, it's time to ping them because I want to send these boards out to people who are going to do something with them. So I'm going to send at least you and Dave one. And
they haven't responded to any time I've tried to ping them.
Yeah, I haven't heard from them recently. I hear from them every once in a while, but I guess last time I heard from them was it after, right around the Hampshire workshop?
That day is the first time I had heard from them in a month and a half or so, and that's the last time I heard from them.
Well, just FYI, if anybody sends me a board, I can tell you I'll do something with it and then provide feedback. So just FYI.
I just need to build enough boards here because I think you really need two boards to do a remote, and then you need the P&I board. So in fact, maybe I need to get on an order of some of those because we need a set of those to go, you know, one to go with each one of these boards, one to go with each pair of these boards.
So, Scotty, I have one P&I board and one of Dave's what are called simple boards or single boards.
Yeah, so you don't have the cable on it. It's meant to run locally, right?
Correct, but I am running it off of the into more or less continuously. I think I've run one longer than anybody else has.
Well, you should be able to plug these onto your Raspberry Pi, one in the backyard at the end of the cable, and then take that P&I board and plug it onto the cable in the backyard, to the one in the cable in the backyard, and theoretically it should run.
Yes, it should run, and yeah, we can test it.
The idea was to be compatible with Dave W's board, so people who are playing with that could just substitute this one.
Yeah, but they're not. You change the addresses around in such a way, I don't think they'll ever work.
Well, that's the local one is, see, I think, I don't know if it uses the same address. Anyway, I think that's fixable because you just pull the thing and decide which address it is. Then it should work for either board.
I don't know. You've gotten me confused about all that. I really can't tell from what you've told me how that should work. I've reserved some slots in my code for whatever the whatever the setup is that you're using. Otherwise, the addresses can be set individually for local and remote for most things. But I've tried to make a versatile tool, but who knows? If you send me a board or send me some details of what you're doing written, I might be able to accommodate it. But at the moment, I don't know squat, and I have wasted an immense amount of effort on people who haven't seemingly done anything, including human.
Well, I don't think it's been all for naught, Dave. I mean, for some people maybe, but it's pushed us along, and it's proven that the way you did it works. So I don't consider my design novel in any way. It's based on your design.
Yeah, I strongly agree with that. If it weren't for you, we wouldn't have these designs at all right now. And as far as I'm concerned, I think the magnetometer, that was the first thing that was out of the gate, and really the first thing that was, you know, we had some actual hardware for. So I think your contribution was extremely valuable.
Well, I'm not fishing for praise. I'm just a little bitter that this has played out the way it has. I really have really felt screwed around.
Well, that's unfortunate that it came out that way, because it certainly wasn't the intent here. I guess when you send hardware to people, you just really don't know what they're going to do with it.
Well, good intentions are wonderful, but if people don't think about what they're doing and what the consequences of their actions are, it doesn't count for much just because you can say you had good intentions.
But I think what you've done is still an integral part of the project, and I think that is actually being included in the final product, which we're still in the middle of developing.
Well, I'm glad of that at least.
Yeah, no, I mean, that magnetometer is a very important part of this personal space weather station.
Well, and Dave, come on, you showed that it would work at remote on the remote wire. Nobody else did that. Nobody else has done that yet. Well, maybe Jules has. But, you know, you proved that part that's on your board works.
That's not really what I'm worried about.
Well, I'm worried about it. It has to work. So if we expect to have something remote, otherwise we could test it and find out that it didn't work, and then we'd be back to square one. Instead, you proved that it works. Now we know that we can use it.
That was sorted out quite a long time ago now, several months. I worked hard to try and get this thing done, actually on this time schedule that Steve Bible said way back at DCC, and have at least something for you to have in Orlando, but I don't see that the model for creating the hardware here really accommodates anybody's design ideas except yours.
Well, okay, sorry you feel that way. I try to include everyone, but guess I don't do as good a job as I should.
Good intentions again. In any case, the code is on the GitHub. At least Julius and Dave seem to know how to retrieve it and build it. Tom also said he had built it at one stage. I keep working on it. It's anyone who wants to use it should be sure and download a fresh copy and build it. It's still very, very alpha, and but it's there for anyone who wants it.
So there's a link on the website for Dave's repository under the magnetometer module. His code is kind of like a standard C code that you would have on a Raspberry Pi or Odroid. So it's vanilla. I mean, it's straight C. You just download it, you do make, and it'll build. And then it's a command line program with switches. If you don't, you can put in a help and get a list of what the potential commands are. And Dave's done a nice job of putting some documentation on the GitHub as well.
And I think that's all extremely good. And that is all being accounted for, you know, as we work on integrating this project together. You know, this personal space weather station overarching project there's a lot of moving parts that we're trying to get, you know, different people are and different teams are contributing. So like the work that you're doing, Dave and Julius, like I absolutely notice it on the listserv, and I really appreciate it. And like that, like I know it's there, and I'm watching like each of the different teams. That team, I'm watching the low cost personal space weather station team at Case Western. I'm watching the Tangerine SDR team. You know, I'm talking with Bill about the development of the overarching software. I'm trying to get the different teams to work together. So one of the reasons I haven't said a whole lot about what's going on, Dave, is because like I'm seeing the traffic on the listserv, and it looks like you and Julius are doing a really good job working out a lot of these bugs. And so to me, it looks like things are going along very well with the magnetometer project. So I've been quite happy with that so far.
Well, I'm feeling fairly close to finished with it here. It shouldn't be much longer, just to test, make sure all the options work with the boards that get thrown at it, but not much more.
Well, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you. Tom, I have to ask, are you familiar with Juhav Yurnin's work on the GNU Chirp Sounder? Maybe he is away.
Oh, I'm sorry. There was somebody at the front door. Could you repeat the question?
Yeah. Are you familiar with Juhav Yurnin's work with the GNU Chirp Sounder?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So Juhav Yurnin, he is a colleague of Phil Erickson's, but he used to be at MIT Haystack. And now he's back in Scandinavia. But he's very sharp in terms of ionospheric radar and signal processing. And he's... and ionospheric remote sensing. And so he's actually implemented chirp sounding using GNU radio as well, and has created code to produce ionograms from this.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. That I got isolated echoes. Producing an ionogram is a whole nother step up in complexity.
Yeah, so take a look at the link I just put in the chat. You can see it there. He's using Edis USRPs.
Okay, so let me look at this. Is he transmitting or just receiving?
I think he might be transmitting here, but I think he also does use just some signals of opportunity as well.
Okay, he says he's receiving a particular ionosonde on two polarizations and then detecting X and O. I've got to read through. I looked at the web page and I've got a bunch of busted figures on it.
Yeah, there's a lot of broken figures on there. You can see there's a couple toward the bottom that work. I think there's a movie that works. And you can also see there's a whole Chirp Ionosonde community. There's an email list which I'm on now, and Dev just requested to join. And so there are some people who have done some of this work, but it sounds like they've kind of been dormant for the past couple years.
Yeah, a lot of the work I did was transmitting and then trying to build enough dynamic range into the system that I could hear echoes. You know, full duplex with the transmit antenna 20 meters away.
Yeah, so we are trying to, our goal is to not do our own transmissions, but our goal is to find the ionosondes that already exist and try to make use of them. Now, one thing to note, and I wrote this in my email the other day, you know, there's a number of different types of ionosondes, and these FM chirp ionosondes are the easiest ones to go after. So even if there are a limited number of them, I think by trying to implement this, you know, there's already existing code that shows that this works, and you have some experience with FM chirp sounders as well. I think we start here.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to have to read through this. What I did was to use, I correlated my own transmit signal to find zero time and all of that. But I agree with you. I think having a passive receive system is a much better place to start than trying to build an active system.
Yeah, we really need to start with passive systems. So what I'm hoping, Dev's supposed to be moving here to Scranton, and he has a lot more experience taking the data from an ionosonde and, say, interpreting it in terms of what it means scientifically, rather than actually, developing the hardware and doing the real engineering from it. So, but hopefully we want to try to create a receive station here where we can, identify some ionosondes of opportunity and try to get this up and running. And then hopefully we can get a few, some other people who are interested in this to try and do the same, and then develop this into a mode that the Tangerine SDR could run on a routine basis.
Okay. In looking at the block diagram that he's got further down, it seems like, at least for the HF frequency range, the Tangerine SDR is an extremely good match to that.
Yeah, and that was one of the goals when we wrote the original specifications, was to be able to do something like that. So that sounds very good.
Oops, sorry, wrong key. Plus the antenna as well. So I think the dual antenna and the Tangerine receiver together might be able to implement that. So that may be a good initial project.
Yeah, so I think that's something, as we start seeing actual Tangerine hardware, come out, I think this is one of the places where we want to start going next with it, something we can do with it.
Okay, so does he basically know the exact time of chirp start for every station that he's looking at?
In this code, I don't think so. I think he's been able to figure that out without knowing that exactly.
Okay, so yeah, typically if you know when it's transmit, when it starts and what frequency, and you can build a coherent receiver, you get a lot of DSP gain.
Yeah, I will have to look more closely at his code, we'll start by looking more closely at his code, and then I suppose we can also ask him for advice if we get to that point also.
Okay, well let me bookmark this and try to read through it.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah, this is one thing I'm quite excited about. My new house, hopefully it will be good for doing receiving experiments like this.
Are you moved into your new house, Nathaniel?
No, we're moving June 9th. Rachel and I spent all day mowing today.
Oh, get used to it.
Yeah, thanks. We will. I think, we're moving in June 9th, but my office radio station area, it's not going to be finished until I think the end of June.
I'll tell you what, I wish I could come up there and help, but I can't. Believe me, I love doing stuff like that, but it's just not possible.
Ah, thanks, Phil. I know it's hard. I think we just need to get moved in first, and then we'll start working on Yeah, I don't know. I think hopefully Dev will be able to come spend some time with me. I think he will. A lot of it comes down to these coronavirus restrictions. But thank you for the offer and the sentiment.
But also, having buddies in the local ham community, they love doing stuff like that. When I put out the word to the local ham community that I needed help putting up the tower that I put up, they were there. They came by the truckload. it's quite amazing.
Yeah, that will be really good. It'll be nice to have that kind of support.
Is there a very strong local ham community where you're at?
I think there's a reasonable one. I haven't really had a chance to build up a relationship with them yet. I actually was planning on having the local VE team come and give VE, you know, exam sessions at the HAMSCI workshop on campus. And I was planning on meeting a lot of them then and, you know, inviting them to the HAMSCI workshop, and then everything folded.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can build that up again. But it was Spark, the Scranton Pocono Amateur Radio Club. They sounded pretty good. So I think there are definitely people in the area.
Very good. Well, I've been participating with the local Tuscaloosa Amateur Radio Club for 20, 25 years for field day, but not this time. So I'm going to operate Class 1 Echo at home for this field day, because it's just not safe for me to go in with a bunch of guys this year, but maybe next year.
Yeah, hopefully next year things will get better. And I'm hoping that over the next year I can, you know, similarly build up better connections with the local ham radio operators and get more established. I think it'll happen.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean that in Pennsylvania, I lived in the Altoona area for years, there's the buddies there. They're the home team. I mean, they'll be there. They'll get your back.
Yeah, that's really good. Rachel's originally from Altoona.
Very cool. Very good. I lived in Tyrone, which is, I worked for the PPG Industries plant there in Tyrone, PA, and it was like exactly halfway between Altoona and State College. The first wife went to Penn State.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
Anyway, I'm going to hop out of here now. Good to hear everybody in there. 73 AB4EJ.
I did want to mention, yeah, we are near our time, but I found a Google Scholar for Yuha, and so you may find some other papers in there about Chirp and his work that might be more current than that webpage.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. There might be something more current than that.
Thanks, Dave. I'll put that. I'll put both links in the meeting minutes.
Good.
Yeah, Nathaniel, just reading the first link, it says he's down converting 25 megahertz of spectrum all at once.
Right. Now, that might be something. Would we have to do that in the FPGA?
Yeah, we might also have to do the he multiplies the receive signal by the analytic chirp signal. And, you know, that would be easiest if we have to do everything to be done in the FPGA.
Okay, sounds good. What do you think, Scotty?
The heat's got to him. From your channel.
Yeah, I guess so.
Sorry, I was away for a second. What was the question again?
For these ionosonde detections, we may have to do some of the processing in the FPGA, because we're going to be dealing with 25 megahertz of spectrum all at once.
Yeah, I think that's easily doable if we just get the algorithm that they need and the format of the response that they want from the FPGA.
Okay.
Yeah. The words, I only read it briefly. Basically, he multiplies the broadband spectrum by the analytic chirp signal, and then you should be able to low pass and decimate that response.
So he does that in the time domain?
Yeah, he does. I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so that should be relatively easy then.
There's another article I just posted from RTLSDR.com, the RTL blog, from May of 2016 about this.
Does it generally have a author here?
An author for the RTL? I don't see one there, but the person who's really behind all of this is Yuha Virenin.
And Scotty, you may not have heard that I found his Google Scholar page, and it usually people keep those up to date, so it should have some of his newer articles in there.
Okay, is that the link that you posted down there?
Yeah, the one that says scholargoogle.com.
Oh, okay. So this is the guy. Okay, I'll bookmark this.
It's like his bibliography.
He's up in Tromsø.
Oh, so he must be buddies with who's the guy in Tromsø?
Shell,
yeah.
But he's Finnish by his name.
Yeah, I think he is originally Finnish.
I spent a year in Finland when I was just after I finished my PhD.
So does Shell still check into the net ever?
Yeah, he's actually on, not on the TeamSpeak, but he's on the listserv, and he's been working on a couple of projects. He was planning to go to Friedrichshafen this year, so hopefully he'll give a talk virtually in that meeting. I think he's still fooling with amplifiers.
Yeah, I still have one of his amps here. I haven't built it. You can tell how long that's been. Looks like, is it Juha is how you pronounce it? He's done a couple papers with Phil.
Yeah, he used to work at MIT Haystack Observatory, so he used to work with Phil.
Oh, okay.
I just found the link I just posted includes a link to what looks like his latest version of the new chirp sounder, which is 1.25. Yeah, so
wow, 0.5 and 16 megahertz at 500 kilohertz per second. So these are the things that I see sweeping across my screen.
Yeah, and that's what we want. We want to be able to decode them.
Yeah, and I think this is doable without any trouble in the time domain.
That's good.
Sounds like it'll be a fun project once we get hardware.
Yeah, I think this will be really good. I think, you know, the low-cost personal space weather station, I think it's good that they're working with the Doppler from WWV, but I think this Ionosonde project is appropriate for the Tangerine.
So on the low-cost one, are they going to be able to do multiple receivers?
I think they are going to be able to do... They have some way that they are mixing down the multiple WWV frequencies into one audio passband, I think. And I think they're doing it that way.
Yeah, that would be cool. So they could take a basically one audio passband that has like 9 frequency mixes in it and do comparisons on all 9 of them with some software algorithm.
Exactly.
Now, there's an interesting thing that the magnetometer project, while it doesn't fit in these low-cost budget, it's completely compatible and could work independently with a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that's supposed to happen. The low-cost personal space weather station is supposed to include the capability of including the magnetometer. And so since the low-cost one is Raspberry Pi-based, the magnetometer should, you know, work directly with their system.
And the code is essentially easily compiled on Debian.
Yes, and I keep stressing to the Case Western group, and I'll remind the group here too, that as much as reasonably possible, the low cost in the regular regular personal space weather stations should be API or code compatible. So, you know, the idea is that the Tangerine SDR-based system should be able to emulate the low-cost one so that we could just flip a switch at central control and all of a sudden basically make the network size much larger with all the same instruments. So there should be a certain level of compatibility, and I've been trying to get the case group to understand this. And, you know, I think Bill Engelke understands this here, but I'm trying to get people to understand that and think along those lines.
Yep. So those pieces have all been built into the ideas that have been built so far.
Yeah, which is really good. And that's something that I want, you know, Dave Witten to understand too, is that, yeah, the work that he's doing, it's very much, you know, being part, you know, of this whole project. It's very important work.
Oh, he understands. It's just this has been boiling for a little bit, and he needed to vent.
Okay, but yeah, I definitely want him to know that his work is very important to the project.
Yeah, and I don't he doesn't realize how important the early on proof of concept things are. Because, I mean, just because it worked the way we thought it worked doesn't mean that it's not valuable, because suppose it didn't work the way we thought, then we'd be really down the road the wrong way, and it would be very important to know that.
Oh, I completely agree.
Dave knows all that, so don't worry about that. It's just he's one of these kind of guys that's very particular and likes to work on things, and likes when he's given me a lot of help in some coding questions, but I've never been able to work with him because he has a style, and if you don't do things by his style, it doesn't work.
Makes sense.
But hey, if you've met very many programmers, this is like most of them.
Yeah, they're all different, right?
And they're all exactly right, and it's theirs. So you have these different pieces that you have to work out and understand.
Every software guy we've had at the place I work, whenever they get a new project, the first thing they want to do is redo it the way they want it, because the other way is wrong.
Well, that's generally the way it is with a lot of people.
It's true of hardware too, right?
Yes, I think so.
I'm very particular with the way I like to write code.
Well, good news. I got the message from Larry Dodd on Tangerine SDR just came in.
Hey,
congratulations.
So how many days was that?
No, I think it was just a few minutes.
It was just the start of TeamSpeak.